you're real close to that basement door, you might hear them actually just click on and off. But really, the only other sound you'll really hear from this while it's operating is a gurgling sound as the water spills back out. The panels, the fluid leaves the drain back from down here, so that green pump will be somewhere off to the side, pumping the fluid up, and then through the copper pipe, which will run up probably alongside your chimney. That's probably what we'll do.
Really?
Okay, yep. And then it comes back down out of the tops of the panels back into this top port. These two stainless female parts right here are to hold a sight gauge, which will let you monitor the level of the solar fluid in your tank. So that's how you can tell when it needs to be refilled, if it ever were the case.
What is the actual working fluid? Is it a glycol solution?
Yeah, we use low-tox antifreeze. Yep.
And is that just to glycol. Keep the panels from corroding inside?
Well, it's more really to prevent the fluid from going through there from boiling. We don't want to create any big... When the first time the fluid hits these panels, it's a rapid heating. We don't ever want that fluid to boil.
And also prevent freezing in the wintertime.
Exactly.
On those rare occasions. The system that Dave's describing is what we call a drain back. In other parts of the country, they can use batch hot water heaters, etc., i.e. Florida, Texas, Southern California, because they don't have to worry about drain. They don't have to worry about freezing. We are still on that borderline where the system that we think is most practical and effective for this region is the drain back, instead of leaving just water itself up on the panels in the wintertime. But it's that heat exchange. It's the, somebody mentioned the radiator. It's that same thing. It's, you know, or it's overheating, and then also making sure we don't have a freeze.
What's the difference between the secondary system and the primary system on efficiency? Because it's a secondary system heating up the water, primary goes direct through. What's the difference?
That's a good question. Bob's got more experience probably between the two different types, so I'll answer that question.
With the primary, so the third type of system that I don't think we touched on is a batch heating, or a primary system, as you would call it. Frequently seen in the Caribbean, Israel, and China, and other places where there's really no freezing weather. So in that scenario, your water goes up on the roof into a big sort of, the collector might hold 40 gallons then on the roof, and it just sits there, and it heats up in the sun, and then it comes down to an electric tank or a gas tank as a preheat. The efficiency differences are, well, number one is the aesthetics. Many people in North Carolina.
Well, you can use this tank downstairs to pumping it up, so you don't have to use it on the roof.
There's no systems designed that have been reliable enough to put potable water on the roof without electric backups and other types of devices that make it much more difficult to bring the efficiency where it needs to be. So our experience, and these were installed 25 years ago, this exact system you're talking about, drain back systems. And when they failed, they spurted water out off of your roof or into your attic for as long as the water was on. And so the possibility for failures were immense. Now, the effectiveness, the heat transfer you lose, to answer your specific question, is you lose about 10 to 15% of your efficiency by putting a heat transfer in between it. But what you gain is the ability that it's not going to flood your house, and the aesthetics. And then if you do put 40 gallons of water on the roof, then there is a bunch of engineering required for your trusses to hold it all.
But even with the difference in efficiency, this can heat that 80-gallon tank in about 4 hours.
Yep. So in the end, the system efficiency is based on how much collection you have versus storage versus your need. And so the incremental cost for a system like that is not less in reality. And then the other potential for failure is pretty immense. So we've seen very few people that would accept the aesthetics or the risk and the roof engineering issue. We could never put one on this house.
This is going back to, so basically, I understand it correctly, there's no water running through this panel. It's
a glycol solution. Just like, if you think of it as like the radiator in your car.
And it goes to that heat exchanger.
That's right.
Your water runs
you got
through
it.
There.
Yep, that's right.
And I have another question.
Yeah.
Do I understand that, so there's a potential to heat a lot more water, hot water, than you're actually using in any given day. Is that correct?
We would normally size collectors versus storage gallons,
okay,
so that on a good sunny day, you would heat all the storage volume. So it's a ratio between each, a good rule of thumb for everyone to have is a 4x8 foot collector can heat about 40 gallons of water in a well-sited system and well-installed system.
I guess because I thought I had seen maybe at the solar house where they had a reservoir of hot water that was like a column that ran through the house, and so they could run hot water into there in the wintertime and it would radiate heat.
Only through some passive solar design as a solar house. Their system is basically this system from 15 years ago, hot water system.
There are systems that we've designed and installed where we're using radiant heating, i.e. where people are putting lines through a concrete slab floor, and we've sized that. In that case, then we're looking at, 350 gallons of storage. We'll have multiple tanks, and that's an engineered system. But it's usually, but generally it's being heated on radiant heat versus, let's say, convective, which is forced air.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I've seen where they had a column in the house that was full of water.
Right.
If you simply heat that water, then in the wintertime,
Well, radiate through the area immediately around it. You have the radiant heat, and then you need some sort of way to transfer that the radiant heat to the rest of the house. But what's there in the basement of that house is really it's just the hot water heater itself that is there.
You'll find there's a lot of different derivatives of, like, what can we do with this heat and how would it work. But in the end, there's no question that what we are installing and what we're recommending is the most cost-effective way to get your water heating. But not to say, well, that's not a good idea, because any idea is a good idea. But from a cost-effectiveness standpoint, a water heater connected with a drain-back module, the two panels on the roof, is the most cost-effective way in North Carolina to get your energy the hot water.
Why do we have four in this case?
Because of that big tree right there, basically.
And these are also only 4x6 panels. These are a little bit smaller than a typical 4x8.
Yep.
So it's the square footage we're looking for.
Yeah.
In that.
Yeah.
There was a question about the cost and the panels, and absolutely there was a question of, because there were lots of different hot water systems out. When I first worked on my first system back in 78, it was basically a tank in the ground was basically a little cold frame up north, and that's how we did batch hot water heaters, and it's evolved since then. And in many ways, the systems that we design are the same ones that we're designing and installing 25 years ago. And part of that is just, what do we know works in virtually every application? And so what we're installing today is what we typically install about 80 to 90% of the time, because we know it works, it's reliable, and you're going to be able to estimate to be able to get 70, 80% of your hot water needs from your solar hot water heater. We don't say 100% because there are times we'll have multiple cloudy days, and there'll be times when you have the whole family over for Thanksgiving and you're just using more hot water, those little peak periods that are there. The panels cost several hundred dollars. The hot water heater, a typical hot water heater, I call the contractor grade, you can buy at Lowe's and Home Depot for a couple hundred dollars. And one is, the efficiencies of mass production, being able to make millions versus, let's say, hundreds of thousands, hot water heaters versus panels. The other thing, if you ever look at the workings of a typical hot water heater that's in your crawl space or in your house, it's a very thin sheet metal jacket on the outside, a steel tank on the inside, and there's no copper outside of maybe the fittings that sit on the outside. That's the only copper that's there, and there's not much to it. The typical hot water heater that's installed in your home has a guaranteed life of about 5 to 6 years, and you'll get about 8 out of it. And many of us, my first-hand experience, my 6-year hot water guarantee, the tank failed at 5 years, 11 months. And when it started leaking.
Their engineers have done a good job.
Their engineers
that out.
Have planned obsolescence. And as Bob was mentioning, what we have here is we have all copper throughout. And the panels that we use, one of the reasons we picked the manufacturer we use is we like the quality of the gauge of the copper they use. We like the solder joints. There's solder joints everywhere along this manifold here, both the top and the bottom. And then there's basically welds. Because what you're seeing behind this panel, we should have brought the cutaway of the AET.
Yeah.
But you're fine right there. This is that black behind the glass is steel. It's a plate steel. And so it's been welded to the copper line going horizontally up and down. So there's a significant amount more copper in these panels than there are your typical hot water heater. That's one of the big cost drivers. And you have a lot more labor involved versus punching out a round sheet metal cylinder, putting a steel cylinder on the inside, putting a cap and a
bottom on it, a few fittings, and out the door it goes. And so it's just there's a lot more hands that have to touch it, even though the manufacturers have gotten a lot of it automated. But that's one of the things that drives it.
I have a question.
Sure.
My hot water tank at home right now is like 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was to do something like this, would it make more sense for me to have this type of system installed and buy a new hot water tank? Or is there one that I could use that would serve both purposes, basically? You know, a new combined tank that incorporates this along with, basically as a replacement for my current tank.
It depends on a couple factors. So our standard system that you guys are looking at in the diagram is a single tank system. It's the most efficient, it's the least cost, it's the most cost effective, and it's the easiest installation in some ways and the cleanest. And in this system, there's an electric element in the top half of the tank. So the electric, on the third cloudy day, you have about 40 gallons of a backup, basically, of an electric backup.
We're talking about the big tank there.
Yeah, the tank there. So if your tank is an 80-gallon tank at your house, and we could do the same thing as this one, we would disable the bottom element, and then you would have 40 gallons of backup, and we could possibly use your tank. We find most of the time we can't use the same tank for a variety of reasons. In Vic's scenario, we're doing our tank as a preheat to Vic's tank. Vic has the gas water heater down there, and he's running a 220 line, and we're looking at it and we're saying, okay, well, when that gas water heater dies or when the price of gas passes electricity for heating water, we'll yank it out. But what we're doing is we're going out of our tank into the cold inlet of his gas water heater. So it'll be preheating. So the cold water from the street will come into our cold water tap. When Vic runs his hot water in his shower or bath, it's good, water's going to flow through our water heater. The hot solar water is going to enter the gas water heater and prevent the gas from having to heat the water.
What about like doing that with a tankless? Is it
same exact scenario?
But it's beneficial to do the preheat with the tankless.
You preheat, you're offsetting your gas cost. Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Is that some of the paths?
Okay. Is it better to go tankless?
That's kind of the Lexus of the systems, is a tankless hooked up with a solar as a preheat. What we're seeing is that
because I have an outdoor water heater,
right?
From a gas company.
Seems tankless. More complicated. Tankless right now, I have a water heater outside of my house, and during the winter, I'm just
Yeah, is it electric or gas?
It's gas.
Gas. For the gas company.
I'm really killing this.
Yeah. So in that type of scenario, we'd want to do a site visit and give you the best recommendations because we have installed solar water heaters in little huts outside and had...
It doesn't quite seem very efficient.
Yeah, we've had good and bad experiences in that, depending on how it was done and the location and a number of things and how cold it really got there. So for a vacation house in the mountains, we'd say no, that would be a bad idea. For a coastal house, maybe yes. And for in between, we'd have to look closely. Right. But either way, what's happening with the price of electricity and gas is that gas is more unregulated than electricity. The utility commission is between the consumer and the power companies for rate structures. So there's more of a buffer with the utility commission, although we don't like everything that they say and do in a lot of ways, but they do run a pretty good buffer for the price of electricity rising. The price of gas is much more of a commodity, where gas rises and falls, a hurricane hits Louisiana, the price of natural gas booms up. And so there's currently gas is still cheaper than electricity by about 20% maybe, but the forecast for the price of gas is rising 10% every year for the next 10 years. So in about a year to 2 years, the price of gas will pass electricity in pricing. So we like to build the flexibility if we do a preheat into a gas system like we've done at Vix to say, okay, when that gas water heater dies, let's look at the possibilities then of just going all electric. So it's not always a simple answer, but in the end, you can preheat to any type of efficiency that you have. You're going to get a certain amount of BTUs in your solar, and depending on how many gallons of water you're using, we can estimate how much money you'd save. It's not complex.
If you put them in series like that, though, don't you have to keep, you're still using a good bit of gas to make
standing losses. Yeah. Your standing losses for a standard gas water heater are not eliminated. That's right.
That's so why the tank
seems like that'd be pretty significant. And that feeds into the, this is really an efficiency question. I take a shower in the morning,
and
I make it up.
The sun's barely been up. So,
yeah. What do you lose overnight?
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, the end of the day to the overnight, you lose about 1 degree per hour, effectively, in a well-done water system that's insulated properly.
Just take a shower at night.
So you lose, yeah. Yes, sir.
Change your lifestyle.
Yeah.
So if you figure overnight, you got about 10-12 hours to your shower in the morning, you might lose 12-15 degrees. Is it trucking away?
No.
Okay, cool.
No, that
exactly
is the truck.
people of Progress Energy have arrived, and they're smashing the truck.
So you lose
10
degrees.
About 10 degrees a night.
Yeah.
So you're going to have some, you can't stop your standing losses in a gas system.
Right.
But what we're seeing to people is, look, you should go all electric anyway in a couple years. Yeah.
I was going to ask the question that we talked about, you know, if I want to be hardcore about it, and I don't want
we're gonna plumb yours so we can take your gas out of the line, and that when you get a cold shower one day, or your parents arrive, or your girlfriend or whatever, they're gonna turn it back onto the gas. So we're gonna plumb his in a way that he can hit two ball valves and turn it to all solar.
But you're gonna wire his for electric or not at all?
Vic can wire his electric if he wants. Yeah,
but
yeah.
Yes.
What can I do if I'm like a weekend place? I can't guarantee that this thing won't freeze, or probably not.
Was it inside the water heater inside the house or in the basement?
Well, it's a basement, but it's it gets down below zero, and it might be like that for a month.
What's your water? Your water heater currently? You drain it when you leave.
I haven't designed it yet. It's not built yet.
So in general, if you're gonna have water, you could choose either an instantaneous,
mm-hmm.
or you're gonna drain your water heaters when you leave, the same way you'd winterize any.
But
facility.
The stuff that goes through the panels is
would never freeze. It's just like antifreeze in your car. It never freezes. You don't worry about your car radiator breaking in the cold weather.
If you're going to be on that design, if it's like a getaway cabin or something like that, and if you're going to try to keep the inside, the conditioned space, like at 50, 55 degrees or so, it won't freeze, you may want to think about having to design in some square footage for your hot water tank.
Put your water heater in your closet or your pantry.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So it's never going to freeze, because you're not going to let the house drop below freezing in all likelihood. Maybe, maybe not. You don't want to develop your winterization strategy, but in putting it inside the envelope, as it's called, certainly helps.
But this stuff is the panels.
Panels will be fine, yeah. Panels will
sit on.
Yep, that's right. Yep. The panels and the solar side is fine.
I've got one more efficiency question.
It's good stuff.
It's about hot water. When I worked in Japan, the refrigerators there were actually like a thermos, you know? They're a vacuum system.
Yeah.
So they don't use much energy.
Yeah.
Is there a comparable sort of system like hot water? Did you see anything like that coming along? Because then your losses would be making nothing.
So let's talk about losses and in the way that those are measured. So for a gas water heater, you have what's called an EF, an energy factor. You go to Lowe's, you look at your water heater, it may or may not be easy to see the EF, but it's there within the product literature for sure. An EF is the energy factor, and it's the measurement of how much of the energy that goes into heating this water actually comes out of the shower head. So a standard electric water heater has an EF of about 0.9, which means an electric water heater loses about 10% of the electricity that goes into heating the water gets lost through the system, through the inefficient thermos, in effect. A gas water heater is much lower than that, because a gas water heater has a big pipe right up the middle of it that lets heat out of it all the time. So a gas water heater might be like a 0.6. So 40% of your energy might be used in standing losses. So when we insulate a system like this properly, we'll find that, you know, the next day you've lost 10 degrees, 12 degrees off of what it was the day before. The solar will frequently heat the tank up in a well-sited system well above the temperature that you're going to normally want to bathe at. So we'll put a tempering valve on it also to add some cold to the hot. So we can take a solar system and run it up to 150 degrees, basically, and then you're going to want 130, 120 at the tap. So you put a tempering valve, which is a simple mixing valve that says, okay, I want 130 going to my tap or whatever you set the dial to, and then it says, okay, the hot water coming out of the water heater from solar heating is 150. Let's bleed a little cold in it. So even then, an 80-gallon tank might give you 120 gallons because it's going to heat it up. Now, you can run that temperature higher and higher, you know. That's one of the big disadvantages of a closed-loop system, is that you can't stop the high limit because it's filled with a closed-loop system. You talk about how they can boil?
Yeah.
Okay. So you can't...
That's why antifreeze.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So a drain-back system has a big advantage in some ways, in that you can set a high limit and it shuts off and it drains back. With a closed-loop, where you install a system where the fluid's always in the panels no matter what, you can't just cut it off because the water on the the roof will boil because it's sitting in the hot sun. It's going to boil. Yeah, so you got to keep it moving. So if you keep it moving, then you boil your tank. So you're left with two unfortunate choices: boil your solar loop or boil your tank. And I've seen the tank boil one time, and I don't ever want to see that again because it's a really nasty day when a water heater boils because it's a bad thing. So it's a very bad thing that you don't want to get involved with. So and it floods garages real quickly. At any rate, and we've seen it happen because you can't stop it because you either boil the solar or the other with a closed loop. Now, plenty of closed loops don't do that because they never get hot enough and they're not sited well or whatever reason. But in the end, it is a real liability that's removed when you go to a drain back. So if you go to Europe for a week with a closed loop, your tank water gets hotter and hotter and hotter. If you're not drawing the heat off of it, it has even more of a chance to boil. So good technical questions about how solar would work at my house, so to speak.
Is there any maintenance that you do as far as do you change your antifreeze?
You test the pH of your antifreeze once every 3 or 4 years to make sure it's not acidic. So it's about the same maintenance you do with your radiator in your car. If it turns acidic, it'll eat the copper in the stainless and start to eat
it
out.
Just
a litmus paper. There's a boiler drain that you add the fluid to the system. You just crack it when it's not boiling hot and take it on a piece of litmus paper and see if it's turned acidic.
And does it often turn?
No, very rarely. Very rarely. No, not very often. Only in systems that are really high temperature. So if you add 6-8 collectors on a roof, it's more likely it's going to turn acidic quicker. What's that? Because the chemicals. Because the panels get hotter and the chemicals, they tend to boil the solar loop more.
You mentioned one panel per 40.
One panel per 40.
Storage.
Yeah.
That's just kind of a rule of thumb, or did you come out here with some kind of light measurement device?
The 20 years of doing this was my main light measurement, but we do use a tool called a solar pathfinder, which we can go to anybody's house and get up on your roof and use this tool. And I should have brought that today. It was on my list, but didn't get checked off, unfortunately. And it quantifies it. It shows the sky and where the sun goes from the summertime to the wintertime. So a quick education on that. It's a good segue into kind of how do I site my house, if that seems reasonable. We can keep asking any question in any order. So in the wintertime, the sun is low in the sky. In the summertime, the sun goes very high in the sky. So what you'll see is that in the summertime, the sun basically goes almost overhead and will rise. In Vic's case, which south is about right here, the sun will rise there in the summertime, come almost directly at an 80-some-odd degree angle right across the sky, and then back down across. In the wintertime, the angle will be more like 35 degrees or so off of the horizon, horizontal. So this wintertime is the angle we're looking at, because very rarely are there obstructions above but not below. Trees grow up in general, and unless you have some unusual scenario, then you're going to look at, where's my wintertime angle? So if you go up onto your roof or into your backyard and think about, well, if I'm standing on my roof, how does it look from there? And you look out and you say, okay, if you put your hand up at 45 degrees and kind of arc across, if there's a lot of trees in the way, you probably have an okay solar site, but not that great. If there's nothing, not much in that area, then you're probably great. The other way to do it, and the easiest way to do it, is to go out on December 21st and count how many hours of sun you have on your roof, because that's really the marker of success. If you get 4 hours of sun on your roof and you're facing, you know, within 45 degrees of south, you're going to come out pretty good. So what do you do if you don't have that? Well, you buy used panels and you put more of them on your roof, basically. Because what happens? It's a relationship. It's okay. Well, I don't have 4 hours. I only have 2 hours. So if I put twice the panels on the roof, I get the same production, is the basic equation. So,
are used panels readily available? Used panels?
We have about 25 of them left off of 100 of them we took off of a job 2 years ago. Yeah. But in the end, or you just put new panels. I shouldn't say you put used panels. We put used panels on Vic's house. You put another new panel up. You add production. If you don't have time, you add BTUs.
Would you use fewer new panels
here? Yeah, we would put 3 4x8 new panels to give the equivalent of the 4 4x6 you use.
Oh, it's just square footage.
Approximately the same square footage. Yeah. There's not that much of an efficiency difference between a used and a new. There's a little bit. The new panels are a little better, but they haven't, over 25 years, they really haven't changed. You know, it's 15%.
How old are these? Are they 25?
20 years old. Yeah, 20 years old. They ran for 5 years on a roof, and then they were shut off for 10.
Do you have to pressure test them, or?
No, we just hope they don't leak. But, I mean, he's got a 10-year warranty. We haven't had one I mean, and you take the cover off. You see all those little screws around? You take it off. You pull the glass off, and you silver solder them. You fix them. It's a piece of copper. But a copper in a box on a roof without some an acidic in it, they sat empty for 10 years.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything. I mean, it just sits there. It gets hot every day, and it gets cold. It's meant to do that for 30, 40 years, even with fluid running in it. So we warranty these as new for 10 years, and we also stand behind our systems. If they break or they have problems, we fix them for people.
The time involved, any thoughts on the time involved to recover the cost of investment?
Yeah, we can go to that.
I just ask one more question.
Yeah.
You were talking about are you angling them at all according to the sun?
Yeah. So the angle of the sun changes from up here to down here. So we look somewhere in the middle is really the best. So a couple things that we do normally, we put panels flat on a roof, no matter what the roof angle is. Generally, between North Carolina roofs fall between 312 and 1212, as a roofer would call it. That's rise over run. So if you go 12 feet out, you go 3 feet up, which is a shallow roof. You go 12 feet out and 12 feet up, it's a steep roof. What's that roof?
4-12, 5-12, 4-12, 5-12.
Your ankles. At the end of the day, your ankles will tell you if it's a 4 or 6. Right? we would angle them up for specific scenarios, like a space heating system, which when the sun would be low, you want the most heat, you'd angle them higher. But anywhere between a 4-12 and a 12-12, we generally put them flat. It does change the production. We can run the specific numbers. It's about 10-15% difference from a flat to an exactly perfect.
There's typically so much heat available that a little bit of loss in the optimal angle is accommodated for by just bulk heat available on the roof. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
I have one question about mounting. Did you say flat on the roof, or is it lifted up from the roof?
Yeah. They're all going to be lifted up, a couple inches to let debris go out from under them, sticks, bugs, things like that. Yep.
Yeah, there's a mount. We have mounting brackets. This will mount on the roof. This will mount on the bottom of the collector. So it's not like they're sitting right on, but it's just up. But we call it flat because it's basically parallel with the roof.
What about
flat?
Putting probably enough direct on the firewood so where's
trying to find the bracket for the ends. Yep, this is we're a little bit limited in with this particular setup because the brackets have to go in particular spots. But for the new panels, the feet slide across the bottom, and so we'll find the rafters if we go across, but not into the rafters.
Yep.
In this case, what we'll do is we'll go under the roof deck after we've run the stainless steel lags through, and we'll run them through, back them out, and then run them into block. And we'll actually add lumber to the underside of the roof deck so that stainless steel lag has 3 inches to bite into rather than 3/4.
You have the flash around it?
Urethane roofing caulk, that's a...